This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. UNC journalism professor Paul Quadros came to North Carolina 15 years ago to write about Latino migration. A few years into his research, he launched Los Jets, the varsity soccer team at Jordan Matthews High School in Siler City, and it was wildly successful. But some of his players face an uncertain future when they leave the pitch. They are all sons of Latino immigrants, some of whom came to this country illegally. Paul wrote a book about the team in 2006 called Home on the Field, How One Championship Team Inspires Hope for the Revival of a Small Town. Well, now the book is the subject of a documentary series directed by filmmaker Mark Landsman. It's called Los Jets, and it follows the team's success. And the show shows some of how the players grapple with their status of citizenship as well. The series premieres tonight on Nuevo TV, but first Paul Quadros and Mark Landsman join me on the State of Things. Paul, Mark, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
So, Paul, tell us about this, about your journalism background, and remind us, because I know you and I have talked about this on this very show, but it's been a while. Tell us about your journey from Chicago to North Carolina.
Right. So, in Chicago, I was an investigative reporter reporting on issues of race and poverty in the city, including immigration and health care and housing. And in 1997, I moved to Washington, D.C. to work for a news organization called the Center for Public Integrity. And the Center was another investigative news organization that focused on special interest money on the Hill. And I was working on a book project for them called The Buy-In of the Congress. And I got really interested in the food processing industry. And in researching that chapter for that book, it became really apparent in 97, 98 that the food processing industry was actively recruiting workers from the border to come into the interior of the United States to work at slaughtering houses, either in the Midwest or in the Southeast. And that's a story that I thought would transform the country, and it was a story that I was really interested in writing about and documenting how these communities were going to be changed demographically.
So you did that, and ultimately you chose to come to North Carolina, that you could have gone a number of places. What was it about what was happening here that led you to come to Siler City ultimately?
Right. So Siler City was picked by me because it had, at that time, two processing plants, a feed mill, some 300 chicken farmers in Chatham County, and it was essentially Mayberry. And so that was really interesting to me, and it was close to Washington, D.C. for my fellowship. And I thought all those dynamics sort of fit together to be able to tell and to examine a very interesting story that was happening in the South.
Poultry industry very big in Siler City. Give us a sketch of Siler City when you arrived.
Siler City, two processing plants in the midst of this transformation from migration. I've described sort of how communities have dealt with migration as sort of the five stages of dealing with grief. And so at that time, when I arrived in 1999, I would say that Siler City was in an angry phase of dealing with change in the town. And that eventually expressed itself through this David Duke rally that happened in 2000. And, today the town is very different. It's, much farther away from that point.
Big culture clash. Here's a small town in rural North Carolina, essentially rural North Carolina, suddenly finding itself with Latino immigrants, mostly Mexican immigrants.
Mostly Mexican, yes.
In this industry. And it was a big change all of a sudden. So you're down there to document this and according to you, change the world, because we all get into this business through some messianic zeal, and I appreciate that. And then you start a soccer team. Tell us about that.
Right. So, I never lived in a small rural community before. And I needed something to do. I had played in high school, and I played through my college years and even after. And so this was a diversion for me to do something in a rural community that I didn't have any friends in. I had no family when I first moved down here, and I was really committed to this story. And so for me, it was a weekend activity to be able to have some fun. But as I began to train these boys, I began to learn their story, and I began to learn their dreams of playing at their local school at Jordan Matthews. And at that time, there was no program, and they had petitioned the administration to create a program, but they'd been turned down. And so that was something that I thought I could get involved in and help to hope to change.
Sounded like a simple enough project, but the school didn't really want to hear about it, did they?
At that time, no, and that administration, no. So there was resistance to the formation of the program. But, you know, we were able to kind of, through a campaign involving community members and teachers and other people, to really change that. And I think for Jordan Matthews at that time, Latino students didn't really feel attached or connected to their school. And so the soccer program provided an outlet, a means by which they could participate and excel and really feel a part of their school and their community.
Tell us about the resistance, though. What was the school telling you, the school administration telling you about why they couldn't possibly field a soccer team?
Well, some of those reasons were financial. And so there are essentially only two sports that turn any money. And so that was one reason. And the other reason was to start up a program was another financial cost. So and then there was a question of where the team would actually play, because they had this idea that you could only play on a regulation size soccer field. And, you know, there's hardly any school in North Carolina that plays on a regulation size soccer field. I mean, the field is much too big. So those are obstacles that we had to kind of get around.
You did. You started the team. And eventually, it didn't take long before you actually won a championship.
Right. It took us three seasons to win a state championship. And I thought that was 1 year earlier than the schedule I had in my mind. I thought it would take 4 or 5 years to be able to do that. I mean, I knew right away that there was tremendous talent among the players to be able to make a good run in the state playoffs. So I was very confident in their ability to be able to excel at that level. We were able to do it in the third year. It was amazing.
So you have here a story now that is some corollary to the Bad News Bears, the team that nobody thought could finally makes it to the big game. And you write a book.
Yes.
It was a terrific book. And at that point, Mark, tell us about your decision when you got in on this, heard about the story, and decided it would make a good series or documentary.
Yeah, well, I was listening to public radio in 2008, just kind of randomly. I mean, I'm always doing that. And I heard
Are you a sustainer? I'm sorry.
I am a sustainer.
All right. Go ahead, Mark.
With pride. And I heard Paul tell the story of A Home on the Field, and I was very moved, inspired. I almost instantly recognized that it's a phenomenal story, like you said, a Bad News Bears story. And at the time, I was thinking this would make a phenomenal scripted project. So I reached out to Paul, and we began a conversation. That conversation fairly quickly turned into a friendship. And, you know, the feature world moves at quite a glacial pace. So as the years were going by and we were continuing to talk, you know, Paul and I were talking about this 2013 season and, of course, what was going on in the headlines and, you know, how so much of this immigration issue is really coming to the fore right now. And I said, well, what do you think about the possibility of our cameras following the entire season this year? And he said, you know, let me look into it. Let me see what the comfort level would be with the boys and their families. And he did. And he came back and said, we'll give you access, which for a documentarian is, you know, that's the golden ticket. So it was great.
You did, and I just want to give you a sample now. You were able to follow that 2013 team and on and off the field. We get to understand deeply some of the challenges faced by those players. Let's listen to Cirillo now. He's the captain of the team in the first episode of Los Jets.
I was not going to play soccer my senior year because I just want to help my family so bad. I just want to work. My dad said that's his job to take care of us, and that one day it's going to be my job to take care of my kids. He wants to see me one day play for a college team, but it's difficult for me just to be in school, and I'm afraid that I'm not going to graduate from high school.
Paul Quadros, tell us about that. I really hadn't thought about that, the idea that kids in his situation might think there's no time for fun and games here. I got a lot of work to do and a lot of challenges to face.
Right. That's something that I see consistently almost in every team each year are some of the boys who feel this pressure that they have to help their families, that they have to work. And many of them do work. I mean, I've known players on the team who have gotten up at 4 in the morning, worked before school, gone to school, after school, come to practice or play in a game, do some homework when they get back home late, and then start their day all over again. So, you know, work in this community is something that's very valued. It's something that defines the men in the community, and it's something that the boys, the young men, want to be able to do and to help their families and to feel the sense of pride that they are. And so it's very much on their minds. At the same time, they want to play too. I mean, this is a passion in their hearts and in the community. They want to play and represent. And so these two things are sort of a conflict with many players. And Cirillo is one of them. He was going through that this year.
Mark Landsman, you talked about why it was you decided to make a documentary rather than a feature film. But why a TV series? Why not a single documentary?
Well, you know, initially we had conceived of it as a one-off documentary, but I had an opportunity to meet with Linda Lopez and Benny Medina, who run a production company called Neorican Productions here in Los Angeles. And this is a company that's run by Linda's sister, Jennifer. And, you know, they were looking to do something really substantial around this issue. And I pitched them this project, and they said, you know, we don't really do one-off kind of projects here. You know, we're working with this new cable network called Nuvo, and we're looking to do something longer. Would you be interested? And actually, at that point, it dawned on us that we had an opportunity to go far deeper into these stories if we could do it over a series of six. And so it was a great opportunity, and it was unexpected. And that's what we did. And we were able to go much deeper into these boys' lives, into their families' lives, and their experiences, as you say, on and off the field. And I actually think as a result, more people are going to get an opportunity to see it, which is really a great thing.
Well, you know, we had a caller who just called into our show when they were listening and wanted to know if this is truly a documentary or a reality show. First, how would you distinguish those? But I get with the first answer it. But how would you distinguish those, Mark?
There's a strong distinction. This is a cinema verite documentary project. This is not a reality show. These are real people, real lives. I'm a documentary filmmaker. And that is different from reality television, with all due respect to what goes on in that arena. You know, we're not sensationalizing these stories. We're giving these boys and this team a platform to speak for themselves. This is a group of people that are quite too frequently marginalized in media. And, you know, the media tends to gravitate towards polarizing this issue. And we wanted to really explore an opportunity to humanize this issue, to give voice to people who are not often heard. You know, Paul very eloquently was talking about the bus, those children in the bus in Marietta last week, and saying, you know, we don't get inside that bus. We're not allowed inside that bus. And the American public, as a result, is left kind of, I guess, a little bit numb to the human experiences of these young people. And that was the real extraordinary opportunity here with Los Jets, to allow these young people to represent themselves in their voices. And that's what really sets it apart from, you know, traditional reality fare.
And the extraordinary thing about the story, Paul, is that while it is essentially about a soccer team and young men playing this game, it is inextricably linked with the immigration issues that surround it, because that's the context in which they play.
Oh, yes. You know, I think for me, the value of Los Jets really is that you are going to see these kids and hear from them in their own words. And that's something that we just do not see in the media. So and that's something that's so needed now, currently, with the situation in Texas and along the border, is that we never, you know, really see or hear from this community and their experiences. And one of the things that I've seen over time in reporting about this is this sort of transition from newcomers to settlers. And that's what we're really seeing on the team now. I mean, I could see it every day that we have a practice. So these kids are no longer necessarily newcomers. They are settlers, and they've settled in this community, and they've committed to it.
Yeah, but their status is very much on their mind, as we will hear from Darwin, who is on last year's Los Jets team.
I came to the United States a few months after 9/11. I was 6 years old. That day, that would be the last time I saw my father. And to be honest, I don't remember how he looks like. Ever since I was a kid, I've been thinking about going to college. I have a good GPA. I play two sports in school. I've helped my community. I just have everything. The only thing I don't have is the documents.
I don't feel different than anyone else, but I know I am.
That's Darwin from the documentary series That Lost Jets, which premieres tonight at 10 o'clock on Nuvo TV. We're talking about that TV documentary series about a Siler City soccer team here on the State of Things. Paul Quadros and Mark Landsman are with me. Paul, is something else that you have to cope with as a coach, because these are kids who are constantly thinking about their status and whether or not they're going to be here tomorrow.
Right. You know, there's an interesting thing that happens to the kids as they make their way through high school. So some of them understand what their status is, and some of them learn about it much later. And there is almost this feeling that as they reach their senior year, they really begin to understand that they are going to go outside of this sort of protective field of public school education, where they are protected, and they're going to have to make their way in the real world, one that may not be as welcoming. And so that's something that they feel very heavily on their shoulders as they play in their last season and as they go through their last senior year. I've had students in the past who have not wanted to graduate, who have sought a means by where they can sort of sabotage their academic career so they can stay on another year, so they can delay that sort of entree into the real world. But, you know, Darwin is a great student and a great player and a great kid. And he's someone that we have invested in. We've invested a lot of time and resources in his education. And I certainly want to see that pay off. I certainly want to see him fulfill his potential and contribute to our society.
Mark, tell us about the transition from the book to the series, because the book, of course, came out in 2006. That was about a particular time and place. Siler City is under dramatic change. Things have changed a lot. How did you approach this series in 2013, 2014 from a book that was really published in 2006?
Well, the book provides the backstory for the entire series, but the series really unfolds in present day and what's going on with these boys in present day and the issues that they face, and also the issues that this team faces. I mean, really, this is about immigration, but this is also about an amazing soccer team that has an opportunity to win the North Carolina State Championship and goes for it. So it's very much about that as well. I mean, it's exciting. We're on the field with these boys. We're on the bus with these boys. We're watching them as they put their shin guards on and roll up their socks and get ready and tie their cleats and walk onto the pitch, and all of the drama. You know, I mean, after obviously we've all been so excited about with World Cup fervor, and you know, that's kind of the same sort of intensity. I mean, it doesn't kind of wane at the high school level. It's these boys feel this like they're going into battle. So, you know, we had that kind of trajectory that we really focused on and kept it very dynamic. You know, but the issues from the book, really, that sort of sets the stage. You know, we introduced that in the first episode, who this team is, who Paul is, the struggle that he faced in fighting for the establishment of the team, the adversity he faced. And then we really pop into the present day, and that's really where the series lives, is in the present day.
And in this present day, Paul, I've only got about 30 seconds left, but have you kept up with some of those first teams that you've coached?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, you are going to see and hear from those now men from that championship team. And one of the things you're going to understand from hearing from them is how integrated they are in our society and how most of them are fathers with children of their own. And that's really the second chapter here in this sort of progression of migration that's happened to North Carolina, is that the second generation's already here.
Paul Quadros, a journalism professor at UNC Chapel Hill and the coach of Los Jets, the varsity soccer team at Jordan Matthews High School in Siler City. Thanks for being on the program.
Thanks, Frank.
Also with us, Mark Landsman, the director of the new documentary film series called Los Jets, premieres tonight, 10 o'clock on Nuvo TV. Paul, thank you for joining us. Mark, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you so much.
Just ahead, audio under the stars on the State of Things. Please stay with us.